Tuned in to Kilkenny today with me, Patrick Blunden, for the next few minutes. It's 17:41. We're now going to talk to David Moore of Astronomy Ireland, and he's on the phone. So, David, I understand we've got rather a lot happening this week. We've got a super moon, which is also known as a beaver moon. Can you tell us about
that? That's right, yes. Well, the moon that happens, the full moon that happens in November, is always called the beaver moon, because beavers get active building their dams, getting ready for winter around that time, and the name is stuck. So you won't be seeing too many beavers in Ireland. The name comes from North America, where a lot of the names come from, because, of course, the Americans popularized the internet, and so their sort of ancient Native American traditions are what's percolated out now through into the internet. So enjoy the beaver moon, but enjoy it more, because it's a little bit closer than normal. It's what's called a supermoon. I don't know if you've heard of those before.
I have. They're not particularly common, are they?
No. The moon goes around the Earth roughly once a month. That's where the word month comes from. There are roughly 12 full moons a year, or 12 months. And it also goes around the Earth in a slightly egg-shaped elliptical orbit. So it can be about 15% closer to us at some times than others. But the two phases and closeness, they're not linked. But they do eventually line up with each other. And it just so happens this week, technically Wednesday afternoon, just after 1 p.m, the moon will be perfectly full. And a few hours later, it'll actually be at its closest to Earth. And the full moon looks full for about three nights. So Wednesday night is the best. But Tuesday and Thursday, the nights before and after, are just as good to the naked eye. And it'll be about 15% closer than it when it's at its furthest, which means this full moon could be 30% brighter than when it's at its dimmest. So whether you notice that or not, a lot of people argue, still 30% is better than nothing. And then technically on Wednesday night, you'll see the biggest full moon of the entire 2025. Not that you'll notice the very slight difference between some of the other big full moons we're going to have this year, but it is technically the best full moon you're going to see. So we want people to get out. Hopefully we'll get some clear skies. Enjoy the full moon, and maybe even take some photographs, line it up with interesting objects, and send your best photo to Astronomy Ireland magazine, where we always publish Irish photos, and we'd be delighted to receive it.
And you're asking for their best one, not every single shot that they take, I presume.
Yeah, if it's clear, we can get hundreds or thousands of people emailing us their photos, and if they all sent 10 or 100 each, we'd be there all year, so it was just sifting through them. So you pick your best one. And that's the one that we try to put as many as possible into the magazine, unless the skies are clear over the entire country. We don't usually get flooded with too many, but just in case. And this weather forecast this week doesn't look great, but don't let that put you off, because it's the full moon, the brightest thing in the night sky. All you need is a crack in the clouds, a quick snap, and you could get something worth publishing.
And there are some pretty spectacular things, I think, happening around underneath the moon, if you know what I mean, over this.
Yeah, as well as the moon.
Yeah. What have we got?
In the coming week. Go ahead.
What have we got? We've got Jupiter.
What have we got? You've got Jupiter near the moon again. The moon will have gone away from being full to being about three quarters full on Sunday. And just below it will be the planet Jupiter, the brightest star-like object in the sky. It's not a real star. It's a planet, but it looks 10 times brighter than the brightest star in the sky, so that's impressive. And it'll be lined up with the moon on Sunday night, so let's hope that one night is clear. It'll be fairly close the night before and after, but the most spectacular one is Sunday night, so let's hope for at least a peek through the clouds then. And we want people to take pictures, because you can photograph the full moon and Jupiter with a simple camera phone. Even the cheapest ones I've seen people send us in great photos. So people don't realize they've got a superb astronomical camera in their pocket. And Astronomy Ireland wants to publish Irish photos, so put the two together. And we can share, people who do get clear breaks with everybody in the country through the pages of the magazine. So that's probably the highlight of the whole month in terms of things to see with the naked eye, Jupiter blazing just below the moon. But there's a comet around as well.
Have you got any tips, or we'll get onto the comet in a second, but have you got any particular tips or tricks about taking shots of the moon or Jupiter, for example?
Yeah. If you have a pro mode on your camera phone, or a night mode, or sometimes some of them even call it an astronomy mode. So just go to your photo app and have a look. Might be in the more menu, and you'll find it there. They're great, because then you can control the exposure, because camera phones expect to be photographing a party or a landscape, something lit up at daytime. And when they've got two bright objects in a pitch-black sky, the Moon and Jupiter, they get confused unless they have these astronomy modes that are becoming popular in the latest models. But even the old ones have the pro mode, and you can change the exposure time and the sensitivity and even the focus manually until you get the best photo possible. And if you play around with that, that'll put you in good stead for photographing things like I was using. Somebody told me it's the cheapest phone they could buy, and we took a picture of the comet last week with it. And there you could see the comet with its tail and stars fainter than you could see with your eyes. And if a simple phone like that can do it in 10 seconds, imagine what the more advanced ones can do. And then some people have the form of digital cameras for taking even better photographs than that, but you don't really need them for the brightest thing. So watch out for pro mode, where you can set everything yourself and mess around with it. Try with it. Your camera is very powerful, and you'll be amazed at the results you'll get with a bit of effort.
I can remember taking a few years ago, with a proper digital camera, I can remember taking one with a very long exposure, and I got an amazing shot with the stars having a bit of a trail behind them as well. It was over an hour. It was great fun.
Wow, yeah. You can do that, with a camera on a tripod.
Yeah.
And a great tripod for your camera phone is your shoe.
All right.
Most of us have a shoe. Yeah. You might even have a spare one. And I've seen people just simply put a shoe on a windowsill and put their camera phone into it. Just a nice soft furnishing for your phone, which might be expensive. And it'll just tilt back naturally up at the sky. And you wiggle it around a bit. Maybe put a few things underneath the shoe to tilt it back. And you can photograph the constellations. And again, as I said, have a go at the plow, you'll end up photographing more stars than you can see with your eye. If there's any comets or even satellites passing over, or Jupiter near the moon, you'll get those as well. Last week we had a SpaceX rocket that was launched from Florida, and that within 2 hours it was flying over Ireland. And they always put a bit of extra fuel into them to make sure for any contingencies they get up into space. But the rockets are multiple stages, and the lower stage falls back to Earth, and they don't want it to blow up. So if it's full of fuel, it might just do that. So they dump the fuel overboard. Of course, the sun lights this up, and the rocket's been spinning, so you get this big swirling spiral, and the actual little satellites next to it. I happened to be out trying to photograph that comet and saw this thing flying over, and it was amazing. I had my binoculars handy, so I took a close-up look. You see the 28 little satellites. But people sent us their camera phone videos, and they were as good as some of the binocular images I'd had. And these were people hand-holding their camera phones. One young child asked, was that Santa and his sleigh flying over? I'm not sure if his father had.
A little bit early for that, but maybe he was on a...
maybe he was practicing.
Yeah, doing a routine tour just to make sure that everybody is behaving themselves. So getting back to, we're doing binocular uses you were talking about. We've got Seven Sisters next to the moon on Thursday.
Yeah. Most of what we do in Astronomy Eye magazine is naked eye, things you can see without any equipment. But, of course, binoculars cost less than 30 quid these days for a really good pair. Go for 10 by 50 millimetres, if you see that written on them, 10x50nm, 10 by 50 millimetres. They magnify 10 times, 10x. And they have 50mm wide lenses at the front, which collects about 100 times more light than your eye. So they're really two small low-power telescopes side by side. And if you aim them, your binoculars, at the moon on Thursday night, you're going to see the Seven Sisters star cluster just in the same field of view. Now, normally you can see the Seven Sisters with the naked eye, but with a bright moon sitting next to them, it'll swamp them. But they'll look really pretty. I've seen this myself several times when they're in the same field of view in a pair of binoculars. So if it's clear Thursday night, don't miss that sight. If you get Astronomy Eye magazine, there's a diagram showing you exactly what the scene will look like as seen in your binoculars.
And what's their proper name? Is it Pleiades?
Yeah, the Pleiades. So it all goes back to ancient mythology about the sisters of gods, hence the seven sisters, and they all get put up into the sky because that's where all the important people are. We now know, really, this is a cluster of new stars, relatively young, probably 10 times younger than the sun, that have just formed out of a cloud of gas and dust and are slowly drifting apart now that they've been newly formed. They're very far away. The light from them is taking over 400 years to get to your binoculars and into your eyes, whereas the light from the moon takes just over 1 second. So it is, I've forgotten how many billions of times further away to the cluster than it is to the moon. And of course, the stars are colossal compared to our tiny little moon. But the moon looks more important because it's that many billion times closer.
And I presume that they're easy to spot, and so they're a favourite for beginner stargazers because they're close to the moon, that are relatively easy to find.
Yeah, the ancient Greeks had no telescopes, and they were able to see and name and count all seven of them. Now, with modern telescopes, we know there's about 1,000 members of this cluster. Obviously, most of them are very faint, but the seven visible to naked eye. In fact, I can really only see five with my poor eyesight. But some people have counted up to 19 of them. So the better your sky is, and your eyesight, the more you can see. But obviously the average Greek could see seven, and that's where the name Seven Sisters has stuck.
Right. And we're seeing the comet Lemon coming into... It's been visible for a little while.
I was talking a couple of weeks ago with Nikki. We were telling people to go out and look for comet Lemon. I had seen it with the naked eye in the countryside away from street lights. Not only faintly, but I could see a short tail the week after we told people to go and look at it with the naked eye. And of course, with binoculars, it was really easy. The tail looked quite impressive. And on photographs, I collect light from minutes to hours. Some of the pictures we've been sent in from around Ireland are stunning. And you get colours in the tail then. And the comet is actually getting closer and closer to the sun. And that's what's causing it to be active. A comet is just a giant dirty snowball a few miles across. When it gets near the sun vaporizes the frozen gases and even some of the water, turns that into steam. This comes off the comet, a big cloud around the comet. So although the comet's only a few miles across, the head of this gaseous cloud can actually be bigger than the Earth, thousands of miles across. And then the radiation from the sun blows that steam and dust away into tails. And this comet has now got two tails, a heavy dust tail and a very light gas tail, we call it. Gas tails are usually blue, dust tails are usually yellowish. So the pictures are really showing this as a classic comet, and it isn't closest to the sun until November 8th. So we're still a few days away from that. So this comet's expected to get more active. It is moving away from us, but that should mean as it gets brighter in real terms, if you're sitting next to it all the time, it'd get a bit dimmer because it's moving away from us. But the two will counteract each other. The moon's in the sky at the moment, which sort of spoils the view, so people in towns and cities get the same view as the people out in the countryside, because the towns and city folk have got man-made lights, and the country folk have got the moonlight, natural light. But the moon, when the moon gets out of the way, the full moon will start to rise later and later. So by the weekend and next week, when the comet is closest, the sky should be dark, and it's over in the west in the evening sky, so nice and convenient. You don't have to stay up late or anything like that. In fact, you want to view soon after sunset. And there's a star map showing you exactly where it is relative to familiar star patterns in Astronomy On magazine. And if you sign up for the magazine, you're instantly emailed what to see in the sky bit, and then the paper magazine comes in the post a few days later. So we want people to see this comet. Bright comets visible to the naked eye are very rare. We did have one last year, to be fair. It's a bit like buses. You get none for 10 years and then two come along at once.
And you can tell, the composition of the comet through what is basically being burnt off of it by the sun?
You can, in fact, yeah. When things happen out in space, it's a perfect vacuum. It's not like here on the Earth. We've got the air surrounding us. And the sunlight, which is very intense, this comet's going to get nearly twice as close to the sun as we are, so it's really going to get roasted. And that makes the individual atoms that come off it fluoresce, and they always fluoresce with a particular colour of light. So the thing called spectroscopy, where you can analyse these colours very accurately and tell exactly what they're made of. And the blue tails tend to be carbon monoxide, would you believe? very low quantities. I know it's poisonous to humans, but it's not the quantities you could actually breathe. But they tend to fluoresce in the blue. And the dust particles, they're actually made of millions of atoms and molecules stuck together. So they tend to just reflect the sunlight, and the sun is a slightly yellowish star, hence you get a yellowish tail. So there's lots of science behind all this, if you want to get into it from that angle. But there's also a lot of art and beauty in just the pictures of these comets and bits being released off them and scuttling down the comet's tail, making knots and other shapes. Every comet is different. I've always been fascinated by comets. It's what got me started originally. So to have a bright one around like this, I'm in my element.
I remember Halley's Comet or Halley's Comet coming past. Yeah. That was a good few years ago now.
1986 it was.
Wow. That long ago. I remember being a child, all right.
I was so obsessed with it that I went to Australia to see it.
We've also had this, was it the 3I Atlas comet? And it's the third confirmed interstellar comet, is it? Is it the third that's come into our solar system?
Third ever, yeah. That's been in the news a lot, because we think most of the comets are left over from when the sun, like the Seven Sisters cluster, formed from a big gas cloud. And so the stuff very, very far out gets frozen. But occasionally, maybe a passing star every few million years disturbs this swarm of comets way beyond the outer planets, and some of them fall in toward the sun and heat up, become nice bright comets. But some of them get ejected and go out into deep space. We never see those. And other stars are doing this as well. So a few comets that come around, it turns out, have been ejected by other stars and just happen to come close to our sun. And that's really important, because we can't sample stuff from other stars, especially what their planets are made of. But when these comets bring the stuff towards us, we can, with that fluorescent technique I was talking about. So we're finding out that, you know, there is definitely a different composition in this comet already. It's right now about at its closest to the sun, and we'll be able to study it for a few more months with all the telescopes and space telescopes we have. So we won't know probably till the end of next year how different this interstellar comet is, and maybe which star it actually came from. But it looks like at the moment it's very old. Our sun is less than 5 billion years old. This comet might be over 7 billion years old. And we'll cover all the fascinating facts they find out about this interstellar comet in the future issues of Astronomy Magazine when it's all been worked out. But the interesting thing to notice is a giant telescope being produced, which Ireland has share of, in the southern hemisphere in South America. And that's going to, we think, find 10 of these comets a year, not just one every few years. So that's going to give us a lot more samples of different solar systems around the galaxy.
Great. Well, we've got to wrap it up now, unfortunately. We've gotten a little bit excited about the comets. Is there anything you particularly want to plug here now, the events?
Yeah, two events, definitely. On Monday, our online monthly lecture. It's all about planets around other stars by an Irishman who's done good and is now working abroad and is a leading world-class researcher in this area. And they're actually now able to check what the atmospheres of these planets around other stars are made of. Are they oxygen like ours and there's life? Who knows? He's going to tell us Monday night. Details on the website, astronomy.ie. And if you're interested in all of this, we have our evening classes running right now every Tuesday. If you've missed the first one, don't worry. They're all self-contained, and you can repeat the entire class when it's repeated in January. But sign up now and do the seven more classes that we have. And again, all the details are on astronomy.ie, where you can also join the magazine to get the magazine. Join the society to get the magazine. Only costs €1 a week. But for free, you can follow us on social media. So we tell you if there's going to be an aurora over Ireland every night and what special things are happening. For instance, on Sunday, we'll remind you of that Jupiter event with the moon. So whatever it be, it free or to sign up for the magazine or to sign up for the classes, go to astronomy.ie.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks a million, David, and hopefully we'll be talking to you soon again.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.